Hi, everyone. Welcome to the sixth episode of the Hockey Hut podcast. I'm AJ. I'm here with Ari, and we're joined tonight by a fellow Leafs fan, our good friend Ami Wenner. Ami, how are you doing?
I'm doing all right.
Yeah, so, you know, we're recording this on the heels of the brutal loss last night to the Senators. You know, classic Leafs fashion, up 5-1, 5-2 going into the third, and we just, you know, we couldn't hold on. You know, why do you think, you know, the Leafs kind of gave up the lead at the end of the game last night?
Well, the Leafs have this habit, and it's not even like this season. It's like a Leafs philosophy DNA thing that we've had for years, and we can't hold leads. But like what I actually witnessed in like last night when watching the game was the first two periods we were on the attack, had them in their own zone. We were playing our style of hockey, fast paced, hard. You have to keep up with us, right? And then in the third period, we're just like, hey, like we're up 5-2. Like, why do we have to, like, let's just chill out here. We'll be defensive. We'll stay in our own zone and we'll just like be smart. But really, like, they shot themselves in the foot by doing that, because why would you alter your game? It makes no sense. Why would you come out in the third period be a completely different team? And when defensively being a defensive team isn't even our strong suit. So why would you go out trying to do that? Mm-hmm. And yeah, we got shots on goal, but like, we shouldn't have looked like that. We should have been what we did in the first two periods, and we just lost our hunger and cost us the game.
All right. For context, for anyone that wasn't watching the game last night, the Leafs had a 5-1 lead. And then in the third period, they ended up losing that lead to the Ottawa Senators, who are probably the worst team in the league right now. And they ended up losing the game in overtime. They totally blew it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So in my opinion, you know, the Leafs are the kind of team that their game style, their strategy is they make other teams play at their pace, right? And, you know, there are very few teams that could compete offensively with the Leafs and, you know, play at the same pace and offensive style that the Leafs can. And in the third period, I feel like the Leafs compromised that. You know, they decided, you know, we're gonna hold back, we're gonna be stagnant, we're gonna be complacent with our lead. And, you know, we'll let them keep the puck in our zone. We'll try and stop them. And, you know, as Ami said, you know, the Leafs aren't necessarily a fantastic defensive team. They're definitely better defensively this year than last year, but they're not the kind of team that could afford to take the foot off the gas at times.
I really don't think that the Leafs were ever thinking at one point, let's let them keep the puck in our zone.
I don't believe that's what he meant.
If you watch the game, then maybe you would think they were thinking that, because we got absolutely outplayed in the third period.
Probably, but I don't think it's because that's what their game plan was. I think it's that the Ottawa Senators' game plan was, hey, we're losing, we should score.
Okay, well, naturally, that would be any team coming into the third periods of the opposition of the Leafs.
Exactly.
With a 5-2, like you're down 5-2, you have a chance. But here's the thing. We played down to them. We came out. We didn't look like – if you watch the first shift of the game, it was I'm going to go on a little side note here. They put Thornton back on the first line. He's been out for, I want to say, like 10-ish games. And I thought it was going to be a disaster because Hyman's been playing amazing. There's no reason to demote him. Put Thornton somewhere else. But Thornton came on, and it was the first shift of the game, not even when we scored, it was amazing. He went hard. He played fast. We got like three shots on net and like we pressured them. And then second or third shift of them, they scored. And it was like, the whole game, that line was playing amazing. So then third period, why aren't you playing like that? Why aren't you going hard like that? I don't know. Hockey makes you tired. That's why shifts are like a minute, right? But you had the intermission. You had time to think about what you're doing. Why take your foot off the gas? Why play down to them? There's no reason to. And the Leafs, I don't know if Keefe's like, hey, we have a cushy 5-2 lead. Let's just play smart and not go on the attack. Because sometimes, you know, we make mistakes. Sometimes it leads to a 2-on-1. But hey, like, that's how we play. We shouldn't change that. And we did. And it compromised our game plan. Maybe Ottawa came out playing harder than they were in the first two periods. But there is no reason we should have lost that game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. Like, there really isn't an excuse to blow a 4-goal lead to the worst team in the league, arguably the worst team in the league. And, you know, we're playing them two more times this week. And I have, you know, hopes that we'll win these games. But, you know, you definitely can't, and not even just against Ottawa in general, you can't take your foot off the gas, because, you know, teams will, they'll get a goal, they'll get momentum, one more quick goal, and it's a 2-goal game. And a 2-goal game, as we know, is never safe, especially for the Leafs. And, you know, you mentioned their top line, and Matthews and Marner have been like unbelievable this season. You know, every time they step on the ice, I'm expecting a goal. And I definitely agree. I think Hyman should be the guy there on the top line. But, you know, if Thornton is able to keep up with their pace, which, you know, he did at the beginning of the game, but it kind of seemed like he faltered off at the end. So if they could find a way, you know, if Keith could find a way to make adjustments to try and keep, you know, the Leafs' legs fresh throughout the game, I think that would definitely benefit them. But Ari, you know, as someone who isn't a Leafs fan or a Senators fan, what, in your opinion, is like, you know, your unbiased take on the game?
All right. Well, as you put it, unbelievable is a very good term, because I would not have believed what happened last night based on the two teams that were playing, right? Obviously, if it's the Ottawa Senators, you know, every Canadian team that gets to play the Senators, it's like a sure 2 points, right? But not in this case.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, the other game last night in the Canadian division saw your Flames take on the other punching bag of the North division, the Canucks. The Canucks didn't win, but they still got a point off you. So,
yeah, it was pretty frustrating, actually, because we were up 3-2 in the third period, and they pulled their goalie, and Andrew Mangiapane had the puck, and he was fully able to get it in the open net, but instead he passed it to Matthew Tkachuk, and Matthew Tkachuk didn't actually get it in the net, but instead he drew a penalty. So the play was shut down there, and then we never got a chance to score in the open net again. They decided to pull their goalie while we were on the power play, and 5-on-5 ballsy with move. Their it was very ballsy, yeah, but 5-on-5 with their goalie out of the net, they managed to score. Brock Besser got the tying goal, and it was really frustrating to see, because Mangiapane could have put it in the net, and it could have been, we could have gotten 2 points. But then luckily we went into overtime with, you know, the extra man, and everyone set up Johnny Hockey, and he just put it in. Everyone was so frustrated. It's just like within the first 20 seconds of that game, got to get it in. And that's what they did. So, you know, I was able to go to sleep happy.
Yeah, got to say, it was probably a frustrating game for a Canucks fan perspective as well, because you saw that Nate Schmidt, you know, bounced it off Demko into their own net last night. So, you know, it always sucks to see your team give up a dud goal like that.
Yeah, definitely. After the first period, where I think there were four penalties against the Flames in like the first half of the period, at least for a Flames fan, like obviously I was like, man, this reffing is so one-sided, and I really have no idea how the Flames can come back from this. You know, we were down 2-0, and it looked like the Flames were playing the same they did the game before, where they just didn't want to play. They didn't want the puck at all. And when Demko got it in his own net, that kind of lifted everyone up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, me and Ami, you know, could relate to a Canucks fan there, because we all remember, you know, the 200-foot shot against Vesa Toskala.
Oh my God!
Years and years ago, and you know, there was another time I believe against the Carolina Hurricanes a few years back, where Jonathan Bernier put it into his own net. Yeah, you remember?
I remember.
So those kind of goals, the ones that, you know, really should never happen and have no place in the game, it's always, you know, it really takes the punch out of a team. Especially because, you know, in hockey, most of the games are close, especially this game went to overtime. So every small goal counts. And, you know, there's a good chance that the Canucks would have won the game in regulation if they wouldn't have put that own goal in their own net right then.
You know, the Canucks have, like, again, Besser tied it up. Was it shorthanded, you said?
It wasn't shorthanded. It was 5-on-5, but...
Okay, but yeah.
They only had that extra man because they pulled their goalie.
So was it considered a shorthanded goal, like in the box score?
I don't think it was. I'm going to check.
That's interesting, actually.
Yeah, I've never seen that. I wouldn't know.
Yeah, I feel like that's a pretty rare. I don't think most teams would.
It was.
I mean, I guess they didn't have anything to lose.
It was considered shorthanded.
Right. That's interesting.
That's pretty cool.
They counted that shorthanded.
I wonder how many players could say they've scored a shorthanded goal 5-on-5.
Well, Brock Besser can say that now.
They've got a good young core. They lost Markstrom to the Flames. And great for the Flames. He's been playing awesome. As far as I know, I haven't been watching all the games. The stats show he's been doing pretty well.
I can safely say he's going to be a Vezina nominee at the end of the year.
Yeah, so great, like great pickup. And then, but now Vancouver, what they signed? They signed Holtby, and is Demko sharing the net with him? I'm not sure.
Yeah, they're splitting games.
It hasn't looked too bright. Like for a team that has a good offense, and they got Nate Schmidt from Vegas, right? And they got a good solid defenseman, right? There shouldn't. it's not a bad team, but if you have those guys playing like absolute crap, like you're not gonna have a chance.
Well, one big change that the Canucks had to deal with this year that people didn't actually realize was going to be such a big change was the fact that Chris Tanev left the team, and he was on that top pairing with Quinn Hughes. And basically the way that they worked was that Quinn Hughes is very strong offensively as a defenseman, right? And Chris Tanev is like arguably one of the top penalty killers in the league. So together they worked really well because Chris Tanev could play really defensively while Quinn Hughes was going up on the rushes. But because Quinn Hughes doesn't have that help now, you know, he's playing with someone else. He needs to put in some more work defensively, so he plays less offensive.
Mm-hmm. I mean, he still has, you know, like staggering point totals for a really young defenseman this year, which is impressive. But yeah, you know, they've got like him, Pettersson, Hoglander, etc. They've got like a great core, but you know, they've kind of been underperforming this year. And you know, it's interesting for the division because, you know, as we talked about last episode, because you know, you only play teams in your division, every game is just that much more important because, you know, even for the Leafs, like a game between like the Flames and the Habs is important, for example, because if it goes to overtime, you know, that's 3 points that are given out to teams chasing us rather than two. So for the Canucks, it's really hard to play against some of the same teams, some of the same better teams over and over again, like them and the Senators. They've kind of developed and cemented themselves as like easily the bottom tier of the division. Mm-hmm. And it kind of seems now, you know, whenever you got a game against the Sens or the Canucks, like, you know, it's an easy 2 points. You know, I would say a lot of that definitely has to do with the Canucks goaltending being, you know, not up to par this season. But, you know, maybe they'll bounce back. I definitely I don't know if I would put them ahead of the Oilers, but, you know, two both young teams. And, you know, we'll see if they can bounce back.
One last note for those of you who are keeping up with your fantasy hockey, someone to watch is definitely Milan Lucic. You know, he scored last game and he now has 4 points in his last five games. I'm personally hopping on the Luch train.
Never really thought, you know, Milan Lucic would be an offensive fantasy option, but you never know.
Just a little thing going off Artie's, like you're talking about the pairing earlier, how Tanev leaving affected it so like a crazy amount. When the Leafs signed Brody, I was over the moon, right? Like that's the right-handed defenseman the Leafs have been looking for. That was our hole. And we filled it, and it was, and every Leafs fan, I could probably speak for all of us, saying like we were over the moon. And I assume you were sad.
I've expressed my anger on this podcast multiple times about Brody leaving the Flames.
Yeah, you know, and he was paired with Giordano, right?
Yep.
Giordano, former Norris Trophy winner, guy's awesome. So when he came to the Leafs, I didn't really think about the fact that they were a pair, right? And that like, oh, what if like Giordano was carrying and this guy ends up just being pretty bad? In the first few games, the Leafs defense really didn't look good. And I'm like, oh crap, we're wasting $5 million a year on this guy. And it was just all Giordano. But thank God the defense is solidified. And again, the Leafs defense is still, I wouldn't say garbage, but below average for sure. And not what we'd want it, where we want it to be at. But like, you know, relative to like what we've been doing the past few years, this is the best it's been. And Brody's been a huge factor in that. Mm-hmm. Well, that and like Hall breaking out. I'm glad I was wrong and that he's been playing well.
Brody's someone who helps the Leafs maximize Morgan Rielly. Because, you know, they've been playing on a line together, and Riley's always been the kind of player who likes joining the rush. You know, a couple years back, he led all the defensemen in goal scoring when he had, you know, I think he had a 72 point year. I think he had 21 goals maybe, which at the time was the most for a defenseman. So, you know, he likes joining the rush. He likes scoring goals. He likes getting the points. But, you know, very often, you know, he either isn't back at defense on time or he's caught out of position. And Brody's the kind of guy who his hockey IQ is great. He always seems to be in the right place at the right time. He's definitely the guy that could be Riley's, you know, like insurance plan for jumping into the rush. And playing them together has done wonders for the Leafs' top blue line pairing.
I completely agree because the Leafs' whole system with Keefe like is dependent on accountability, right? Like he's like, hey, you know, Dermott, Rielly, I trust you guys to go pinch as long as you know there is someone to get back. Or you yourself can get back. And hey, Riley's crazy fast. Like a lot of times, if there's a two-on-one happens because he pinched, he gets back. He's the guy who drops down, makes the play. Like in the system at the beginning, it didn't work out so well because our players weren't ready for that. None of them got back. But now, like we've got Brody and we've got Hall, who are actually playing smart defensively. They are just offensive defensemen, and it's working out pretty well. We still give up the two-on-ones, but way less than usual, and I'm decently happy with it.
As much as the Leafs upgraded their defense this year because of Brody, the Flames actually, you can consider, the Flames never actually downgraded their defense. Overall, from what all the stats have been showing, the Flames' defense has been very, very good this year, and they've actually, I would consider the Flames upgraded this year. Their entire top six, definitely better than it was last year.
Sorry, who did they add? I don't remember all the signings.
So we got Rasmus Anderson moved up in the lineup to replace Brody. So he's now with Giordano. Okay. And then Hanifin is now paired with Chris Tanev. And they've been literally one of the top defensive pairings in the NHL. It took them like, I think, 10 games. No, not 10. It was like 9 games in to allow their first 5-on-5 goal in the season.
It's impressive.
And then our bottom pairing, actually, we got our rookie, Juuso Välimäki, who was playing in the Finnish leagues while the season was stopped. Mm-hmm. And he was a point-per-game defenseman in the Finnish leagues. And then we signed Nikita Nesterov, who used to be on the Tampa Bay Lightning, went to the KHL, and then came back to the NHL to play for the Flames. And that bottom pairing has actually significantly upgraded the entire Flames defense overall.
That's great to hear.
Yeah, you mentioned the stat that they haven't let up a 5-on-5 goal. So a really interesting stat so far from, in my opinion, and I think statistically, the best defensive pairing so far this year has been the pairing of Justin Falk and Torrey Krug on the Blues. I think their top pairing, up until now, I believe, you know, I saw the stat a couple days ago. If they maybe gave up one of the goals last night, I don't know. But they haven't let up a 5-on-5 goal yet. And they're both huge pluses. They've been contributing on offense, defense, and Krug, I thought, was a great acquisition for the Blues. Definitely like a nice young guy who could come in and replace Alex Pietrangelo.
Yeah, Krug was definitely a great answer to the loss of Pietrangelo. And when they got Justin Falk, that, like, people didn't really realize how big of an impact he would make. And he has been very good for that team.
Pretty interesting that they just let Pietrangelo go. And, you know, they obviously didn't want to pay him. He asked for $8 million a year, I want to say. They didn't want to pay him that much. And they are like, did they sign Krug before Pietrangelo signed? I think.
I think they signed Krug before, right? Yeah.
Oh, true. But I think at that point, I think it was already pretty common knowledge that Pietrangelo,
that he was like looking back. Elsewhere.
People knew he wasn't going to re-sign, but you know, Torrey Krug signing was a pretty big surprising to most people at the time that it happened.
You know, like Pietrangelo was the captain, right? They'd come off, they won the Stanley Cup in like the year before, the huge impact guy, great defender. But hey, like Krug's younger. And, you know, a lot of these long deals that are expensive with the term over 30-year-olds don't end up working out well. So I guess they just didn't want to take the risk. You know, losing captain's a big deal. But Krug, as a guy who's been watching Boston games just because the Leafs have been playing them, he destroyed us a lot. Just his power play, his IQ on the power play is amazing. Like Boston overall, they're all very smart hockey players. And they're hard. They're hard. They're tough. You know, I think it's a great addition. I don't remember if Falk was a signing or Falk was a trade, but you know, both.
It was a trade from Carolina.
And I definitely didn't think Krug was going to be as good as this, right? Like Pietrangelo, Krug's more known for his offensive game. I didn't know how it was going to go, but hey, it's been good so far. And like, kudos to the Blues for like saving money and getting this guy who's making a great impact. Plus Falk, but it was more about Krug. Yeah.
All right, welcome back to the Hockey Hat Podcast. We now have a special guest coming in, our good friend Dove. He's here to talk to us about what he thinks about the NHL. And then later we're going to ask him some questions that he's going to try and answer for us. So Dove, thanks for coming on the podcast.
Yeah, for sure. Happy to be here. I hope I can contribute, even though I have basically zero knowledge about the NHL, but let's do it.
So yeah, that's kind of where we wanted to start off. So, you know, you've been friends for us for a while, you know, me, Ari, Ami, three big hockey fans, but you know, you've never really got into it. So, we were wondering, like, what about hockey don't you like? Like, and we know you're a basketball fan. So it's like, what does the NBA do? And what does the sport of basketball, what do you find appealing that, you know, the NHL and hockey might lack?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So first of all, I mean, I didn't grow up with hockey the same way that I know a lot of other Canadians have. I mean, my parents aren't from Canada, so I didn't really have that like growing up. So that's obviously like a big contribution as to why I'm not really a fan. But that said, I wasn't really, you know, brought up with basketball either, and I got into that. So why I think the NBA, for me at least, especially like caught my eye and, you know, actually got me more interested, was they have a very good way of making you sort of like attracted to the player. In terms of the NBA personalities, the NBA does an amazing job at making you, you know, feel a sort of connection for the players that I think it's a little less difficult a little more difficult to do with the NHL. There's something about the fact that the players aren't wearing helmets. It's that it's a smaller court, so you kind of get to see them a little more and you get to see the reactions a lot more. That makes it a little more personable, I think. And that's why I'm a little more attracted to the NBA. Of course, it's different for everyone. So I'm not saying this is like the ultimate reason. I'm not so knowledgeable as to what, you know, whether the NHL is bad at this type of thing. I don't really know, but all I can say is that the NBA is very good at it. And that's why I'm attracted to the NBA.
Yeah, that's a big thing that a lot of people say, is that the NBA knows how to market their superstar players towards the fans very well. And as a person who just started getting into basketball this year, I can already say that I can feel that connection that you spoke about with some players that I've been watching even just this year.
As someone who also only just got into basketball from, you know, watching a couple of players, it really, you know, you make a good point about the helmets, because when you're watching a basketball game, you can kind of see, you know, you can hear people, you know, trash talk on the court. You can see the facial expressions. You can kind of get a sense of, you know, how these people are as people. And I think to fans, that's, you know, that's pretty important. And because, you know, you want to relate to the people, right? You don't want them to just be like a form of entertainment. So I feel like for hockey, because hockey is a little more, you know, it's more corporate, but like the fact that there's helmets, you can't really hear what's going on. And when you combine the fact that the NHL doesn't really market its players that well, it's definitely like valid reasons to be attracted to a sport like basketball a lot more than hockey. And, you know, it's something that like I wish the NHL did better, because as a big hockey fan for almost my entire life, it sucks to see that, you know, the sport isn't really growing at the same rate as other sports. And I would say it's actually kind of faltering compared to the NBA. I feel like, especially in Toronto where we live now, everyone of course remembers how hyped the city got when the Raptors were in the playoffs. It became like a cool thing to follow the Raptors. And, you know, I feel like it never really gets to that level for the Leafs. And obviously the Leafs are Toronto's team, but that's only within the group of people that are already hockey fans. Like, they go nuts. But the Raptors and the NBA, they were able to make it like a Toronto-wide phenomenon. And I noticed, like, I remember, Dove, that's kind of when me and you started talking a lot more about basketball, when you started watching their games a lot, because the Raptors made you want to watch them. And I think that's something that most teams in the NHL don't really do a great job of.
Right. In a similar way, aside from the NBA and watching, like, basketball games and watching professionals do it, the sport itself is such an accessible sport in terms of the ability to play it. I mean, all you need is a ball and a net, and there are public nets everywhere, that it just made it a lot easier to become attracted to the sport, like as a player, right? And with hockey, I mean, I played hockey. I mean, of course, this is sort of out of sorts because I'm Canadian, but I played hockey for the first time on ice like this year. So, and it's obviously a lot harder to, like, you know, get your skates and all your equipment and all that. I did, actually. I had a really good time. I mean, I'm not like the best skater or the best shooter or anything like that, but it's a lot of fun. But I do have to say that pick up basketball is just such an easy thing to do, and such so easy to get to it. I mean, obviously not in these times, but, you know, when it's not, you know, a pandemic, that you know, that makes basketball accessible as a game itself and not just as a viewing experience.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think that's a good point. And one of the cool things about pickup basketball is, you know, you can like go to a park with some friends and there could be like 50 other kids playing there. And you can just hop on the court with them and start playing with them. All of a sudden, you know, you're like, you guys are friends. Or even if you're not friends, you know, you're playing together. It's just like kind of like a community sense. And for hockey, because, you know, pickup hockey on rinks is still a thing in the winter and stuff, but because it's not as prominent and it's not as easy, you know, you got to have skates, you got to have a stick, whatever, all that kind of stuff. So it's expensive. So because of all that, I feel like a lot of people are more drawn to just recreational basketball as opposed to recreational hockey. And obviously when you're playing a sport for fun, you'll be more interested in watching that sport, you know, as a hobby.
Yeah, definitely.
All right, now we're going to be switching into a new segment that we have where we're going to ask Dov some questions about hockey, and we're going to see how much he really knows just from listening to his friends talk and watching the occasional game that he has to sit through when he's with us.
Oh boy.
And you know, there's a good chance you won't know a lot of the answers. Just, you know, give a guess. It's all for the entertainment, you know?
All right, you got it.
Try not to ask follow-up questions to these because I will probably not be giving you any hints to these. We're going to start off with an easy one. Hopefully an easy one. Who won the Stanley Cup last year?
Ooh, that would be the Tampa Bay Lightning.
Nice.
You're correct.
Ding, ding, ding.
Congrats.
All right.
All right. Which player currently leads the NHL in points?
I'm going to guess Austin Matthews.
That is wrong.
All right.
The correct answer is Connor McDavid.
Oh, I know him, I think.
Don't we all?
All right. All right. Next question. Who won the President's Trophy last year?
Okay, I know you said no follow-up questions, but can someone tell me what the President's Trophy is for, at least?
Nope.
Well, now I feel bad. Come on. What are the odds if we tell him the clue, he will guess it? No? All right.
Dove, you got an answer?
I think this is a no-brainer. I think it's the St. Louis Blues.
No, that's actually incorrect. It's the correct answer would be the Boston Bruins.
That was a good guess, though. That was a good guess.
That was an educated yes. Mm-hmm. I was going to say, can I give him like a rhyme hint? And I was going to say the Schmost and the Schmoons.
Next question. Who has the most points in NHL history?
Well, the classic answer would be Gretzky, because he's just like known as the all-time great. But I feel like it isn't him. I don't know, like someone like Gordie Howe or something. But you know what? I'm gonna play it safe. I'm gonna settle with Gretzky.
That is the correct answer.
Nice.
I was good trying job. Not to laugh when he's like, that would be the classic answer. I was trying not to laugh. I'm like, oh, not because Dove was gonna be wrong. Just because like he said it and then.
All right. Next question. Who is currently leading the NHL in goals?
Okay, that one I think is actually Matthews.
Yeah,
you would be correct. Yeah,
let's go.
Matthews currently has 13 goals. He is leading the NHL. Who won the Vezina Trophy last year?
Guys, with these trophy names, I don't know what the hell.
Best
they
goalie.
Are.
Best goalie.
Best goalie in the league.
Oh, best goalie. Okay, Marc-Andre Fleury.
It's an interesting answer there, but
and the survey says
you're wrong.
Yeah, it's the only goalie I really know. I think.
And then Big Save Dave. I was about to say, if you're friends with me, there has to be a goalie that you know.
That's a pretty random one to know.
Yeah, I had
a figurine he's good.
When I was a child.
Hey, he's good.
When I was a kid, I had a Marc-Andre Fleury figurine. Also a Joe Thornton one. So I have like a bunch of random hockey names.
Joe Thornton's on the Leafs now.
Jumbo Joe. Yeah.
Did we tell him the answer? We didn't say the answer, did we?
Oh, the correct answer is Andrei Vasilevsky. He was the goalie for the Tampa Bay Lightning.
I actually have heard that name, but I did not know he's a goalie. All right, cool.
All right. Well, thanks for answering those questions. If you guys liked that, we will be sure to bring on more people that don't know anything about hockey and we'll ask them more questions like this.
Mm-hmm. That just really makes sense. It's counter to like, you know, business strategy that you'd think. It's like, oh, it's a hockey podcast. You bring on the hockey people. But I like it. I like it's ambitious. Yeah.
Thanks for coming on the podcast, Dov. That was very entertaining for us.
No problem. I'll see you around. Ooh, hoo, 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 hoo.
That wraps up the 6th episode of the Hockey Hut. We hope that you guys enjoyed listening to it. As always, follow our Instagram at @the_hockeyhut, the TikTok at Hockey Hut. And next week's episode, it's a big moment for us. We've got our first NHL player, first of many, we hope, Curtis Gabriel, who's currently playing on the San Jose Sharks. So we have a really good conversation with him planned. We're going to talk about some, you know, inside the NHL stuff, some mental health in hockey, and you know, it'll be really interesting. So you know, stay tuned. We hope you like the episode, and yeah, have a great day, everyone.